Board of Regents, our committee meeting via Zoom for April 17th, 2020. Our now start time was 1 p.m. Central Time, and we are at that point. I want to welcome all of the regents, extend the greetings. You can see Dr. and President Caboni and I are here socially distancing apart. And greetings to each of you. I've spoken to most of you over the last few days, and as far as I know, we're all safe and sheltered in. Appreciate your attendance this afternoon. Because it is a Zoom meeting, we're going to take a roll, and so I call on Secretary Brinkley to conduct a roll call.
Regent Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brinkley. Present. Regent Ernst. Regent Harris.
Present.
Regent Higdon.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney. Present. Regent Nichols. Regent Porter.
Present.
Mr. Chair, we have 9 regents present representing the quorum of the board.
With the quorum, we are now official to conduct business. Again, welcome. We'll proceed right into the agenda. The first item was an informational presentation on the WKU master plan.
Good afternoon. This is Brian Russell, and this is my first board meeting as well with using new technology. Pretty awesome. I'd like to introduce to you all David Groves of Gensler Architects, and he's going to be doing an update for us today on the WKU Campus Master Plan 2020-2030. Thank you.
Great. Good afternoon, everybody. The slides are up.
Where's that coming from?
There we go. All right, great. So as Brian Russell said, my name is David Rose. I'm a principal at Gensler and leader of your team for the WKU master plan that we're underway with. Our team has also been fortunate to be involved in your campus working on the Commons at Helm Library, which project is under construction right now. And actually gave us a lot of insight into the vision and ideas of the university that has rolled nicely into this master planning project. Next slide. You can go to the next one as well. So what's interesting is as we enter our master planning project, it always ends up with a couple of primary questions that come about through various conversations that we have. And I'll say the bottom statement on the slide to promote student success across the region. That's really been what has resonated to the top as far as not only what happens on the Bowling Green campus, but each of your campuses, and especially in this day and age we find ourselves in today, it is all about student success. In this particular instance with the master plan, it's how it relates to the physical environment as well. Next slide. So as I said, we've casted a wide net of stakeholders, including the president, faculty, students, alumni, staff, and city leaders. We've found in master plans the best way to develop a master plan is to have a diverse perspective all the way from the beginning. Next slide. Our team has taken over 4,500 steps on your campus, which, in quick math, it equates to about 25 miles of walking. We used over 1,700 post-its. Next slide. We've received digital survey responses of over 1,000. We've analyzed over 300 teaching spaces, over 205 gigabits of data has been received, all of which will lead us to the bottom number on this, which is 5 guiding principles that will lead us to a framework as we move into the next stage of this master planning project. Next slide. So some of our findings, the next slide. We are looking at the regional perspective of the WKU campus system. And your campus is many things to many different people in each one of these locations. The next slide, in Bowling Green, even there's four distinct districts. And we're looking at each one of those as well. Next slide. I will give credit to Brian and your campus team that has allowed us to get smart very quick. They keep a lot of data, both on the conditions and the knowledge of these buildings. And our opportunity in this beginning stage is to begin to visualize that. So all that this diagram is showing is your building age from pre-1920s to present. You really see graphically on some data graphics like this that your campus definitely started on the hill and moved its way down. The next slide. There's even some historic fun images that we found where that center of the hill was at one point had an excavation of a water tower at the top of it. Many of these buildings still remain. Some have moved on. Next slide. As we begin to enter this information that Brian and his team has given us into a synthesis program, it begins to highlight different areas of hotspots on your campus. So, for example, in this particular image, the blue is where the classroom are most concentrated. Obviously, where it's the deepest blue is where the highest concentration of classes. It's also interesting to look at the red, which is student housing, and gray, which is parking. And we begin to overlay it with the pedestrian pathways that are both on the street, as in sidewalk, or in greens. It provides a nice overview as far as how the campus has evolved over time. And through our survey that I talked about, we can begin to understand where the pinch points or struggles are within the existing campus fabric as well. Next slide. There's also a very good facilities condition map that's been created for your campus, helping us understand what buildings are in the most need of deferred maintenance repair, which ones are in the best. It is interesting that the top five or six buildings here that have a circle around it that are rated either poor or fair, such as Cherry Hall, Kelly Thompson. If you go to the next slide, that those are some of the buildings that are in the highest use. So what this data visualization begins to show is minutes taught on campus. So the bigger the box, the bigger, the more hours that are taught on the campus. So the same five buildings that are dotted on the left on this are also the same five that had some of the highest needs of renovation, an area of observation, and that these are a lot of the spaces that your students are frequenting on a regular basis. When we begin to look at that instruction time, it's similar to classroom buildings. It's just showing the hours of the minutes of instruction, as was on the previous slide. And go to the next slide. We begin to then slice and dice it based on minutes or actual individual rooms. So each one of these rooms, each one of these vertical bars is a room. And you can begin to see where some of them are being utilized at a very high percentage, some are being utilized at a lower percentage. Your average classroom utilizations, where 100% is that the classroom is used 45 hours a week, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, your average utilization is about 44%, which trends a little bit lower than what higher ed benchmarking would lead us to believe. So part of this exploration, too, is trying to understand that, understanding what are the attributes of the spaces that are being used in high frequency and what are the attributes of the spaces that are being used in low frequency. There will always be outliers of spaces that will never reach full optimization, but how can we increase that number to make your facilities recharge? Next slide. As I mentioned, we have received a tremendous amount of survey responses, more than half of them are the students. So that's the big headline on this for you to be aware of, is that a majority of the respondents feel safe on campus for 80%, which means that the campus is providing a nice feeling of safety for your campus occupants. Next slide. And then what's interesting about this one is looking at a comparison between students and alumni. The students' top priority in the survey response was to excel at their subject and at their schooling that they're here for. Alumni's top response from when they were on campus was about the experiences with their friends in the community to build that network. That's what they remembered about being on campus. Next slide. And what's powerful about this is going back to that first slide that I talked about student success. Both faculty and staff share a top priority to see the students thrive on campus. Next slide. And when we talked about what they asked for as far as desired change on campus, they got down to navigation, trying to understand how to get around better, how to reach those buildings, and especially if you think back to that heat map where there, some of those heat centers were far apart, how do we connect those better as far as an experience? I do also appreciate this survey was done just a few months ago, and that a top response was that they wanted to embrace digital learning technologies more. Fast forward to today, I think they have all gotten what they asked for, what they wanted to receive a few months ago. Next slide. So as I promised, this gets us to the five guiding principles. And they're really, the bottom of the slide up, they're really focused on recruitment, retention, and success as far as where these guiding principles begin to apply themselves. Next slide. And so if I go through these, you know, the five principles are to reimagine thresholds and reveal hidden experiences, to let students see really what's going on in other disciplines adjacent to them, to accelerate community building on campus, understanding that socialization can happen out in the public as well as inside the classroom. The third one is one that was one of our initial hypotheses, and it's focusing student success towards tangible outcomes. Understanding how students can connect with a broader alumni network and work with non-traditional students. Exhibit a culture of holistic thinking, so to kind of encourage those unexpected connections to invite the industry in. And the fourth one is to unite the teams around a common purpose, to realize that while they may be part of individual schools and pathways, that they are part of a larger institution that collectively can move forward powerfully. The next slide. It's important to know, too, that these guiding principles aren't done in a vacuum, that they are aligned with the strategic plan. So as we went back, we firmly believe that the campus master plan is the physical manifestation of a strategic plan that an institution would have. And so it's interesting then when we begin to take apart the strategic plan and align it to these five guiding principles that we really see a lot of alignment there. Next slide. So then a quick overview of where we're at. This might be one of my favorite schedule flow diagrams that my team's ever created, and that it really kind of visually portrays what we've been doing. So what we have presented to you is a very small snapshot of the where we've been. We're in this middle part where we've come to the five guiding principles. Now we're going to widen again. We're going to look at design opportunities. How do we apply these guiding principles? And then end up towards August, where we'll come back with a few recommendations that then lead into one triad master plan.
Thank you. Is there any follow-up or questions from anyone regarding the master plan? Mr. Preston, any comments?
So one of the things that is guiding our work, continues to guide our work, is the strategic plan, and Dave nailed it. And there's a reason these things happen in this order, is that you have a plan for the academic work and the retention and graduation work that we have in front of us, all the other innovation that we're going to do that comes out of the strategic plan, climbing to new heights, climbing to greater heights. And then there are sub-portions of that, one of which is we said we're going to go through a master planning process. And one of the things I'm most pleased with is that this is a process that has been inclusive, again, from the bottom up, has engaged all of our stakeholders, but is not a small group or a single person's vision for the institution, but our common vision, and also that it's deeply anchored in the strategic plan because they have to work hand in glove. And so I'm thankful for where the work is. I think that what we've seen resonates as being true. There are some nuggets in there that were surprising, and I think that's a good thing. You want to be surprised. If you just get back what you think you already know, then we haven't pushed the envelope enough. So I'm pleased with where we are. As we will say over and over again throughout the meeting, even though we've changed the way in which we're working, the work must continue. And I'm thankful for Dave and his team from being able to continue that work and for the master planning group and for Brian Russell and the whole group's leadership. It's great that we've maintained our momentum and our progress.
Thank you.
Can I ask a couple questions?
Sure. Regent Klaus?
Yeah, that's awesome. So at this point, this was very general, right? There were no concrete parts of this master plan. I'm assuming there are going to be some concrete things coming out of it, which will be presented to us in August. One of the things I noticed that you mentioned that the transportation, how students get around on campus, was one of the issues. And so we have this bike program. And if I would give you a European perspective on our campus, it is actually pretty fun-friendly to its bikes. To give you one example, one of the recent changes we made on that road in the middle of campus, we put on these aisles. Right, and the problem with these aisles is that now if somebody is biking there and there's a car, you can't pass. And so this is not helpful in terms of making things bike-friendly. And so I'm looking forward to see what kind of ideas you guys come up with this to make things better.
Absolutely, and the phrase that we use in the planning realm is a balanced environment or a balanced street. And the best procedure policy with that starts with the pedestrian, because we are all pedestrians at some point, regardless of how we arrive on campus. And then usually it goes to bicycles or some sort of shared transportation like that, then to buses, and then finally it's private automobile. So we'll be looking at what that right balance is for your institution, and then looking to create recommendations on how to prioritize that in future projects.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Before we move into the next item, I'd be remiss if I didn't extend a welcome to the extended WKU family that is joining us today on YouTube. Thank you for caring for your university in these unprecedented times. I think you will see throughout our meeting today that our focus is always on our student, on that student's success, and the things we do, whether it be from the master plan and to other items that you will have today, will remind all of us that our focus remains and we care for our students. The next item is a report from our president on the COVID-19 response and planning.
Chair Hinson, thanks so much, and thanks to all the regents, for everyone on the cabinet who is joining us electronically from your homes and scattered about the region, for alumni and other folks who are interested joining in. I'm thankful for the work that you've done, the care and concern that you've demonstrated through your actions for our students and for the broader WKU community. This essentially, at least for the time being, is our new normal. And I'm really proud of how we respond as an institution. About 4 weeks ago, after having watched the spread of coronavirus internationally and in the United States, and in consultation with our local public health officials and with public health experts from across the nation, the leadership team, along with regents and governance, made a decision that after our young people had been away from campus on spring break, many of them traveling around, it likely would have been unwise to bring them back to campus. And we were particularly concerned with those students who would be in our residence halls, particularly after watching the experiences of those aboard cruise ships. There are some commonalities between the two, confined living quarters, common dining spaces being two of those commonalities. And so we made the decision, and I'm proud of when we made it, because if you look at where we were on that Wednesday, there were very few other institutions nationally who went when we did. We were paying very close attention and doing good environmental scanning. So we extended spring break for a week and worked as a university and as a community to shift to remote instruction. And we used that language on purpose, because this is not online education. That requires more planning. It requires a different kind of pedagogy. We are really doing all we can to ensure that we keep our students on track to finish the semester, and those who are graduating to graduate on time, and those who are on a path to graduation to continue on that path. So I want to just pause and thank the entire WKU community for what has been an amazing response. We have transitioned 2,500 face-to-face course sections, created over 2,500 micro-lectures, little videos. We had 600 faculty. Remember from our last meeting, we had just begun some of those additional in-person trainings. 600 faculty attend 29 training sections. We conducted 700 hours of Zoom and Blackboard training, and our faculty worked over 20,000 overtime hours to make this transition. And I know that there are about 150 faculty who had never trained on Blackboard, which means they have never used Blackboard. And I guarantee you, each one of them today is engaged in that remote instruction. So I'm thankful for the way in which we ramped up. I want a special thanks to those who done what is incredibly uncomfortable, but also our instructional support staff, the Center for Innovative Teaching, DLO, and everybody else. This has been an incredible accomplishment that we've created. We also emptied our residence halls, and we did it in a way that we were able to maintain social distance. And so for those who needed a place to stay, we created a single residence hall, Hilltopper Hall, where about 50 students live today. I have to thank the Alumni Association. About 5 days after they moved, we realized how challenging that would be for those young people to live in a single room, isolated from one another and their larger community, but still able to have a safe place to be and a place to get their meals. And so we had alumni step up, many of whom were alumni who were also faculty and staff, to adopt those young people, to send them care packages and notes and make sure that even though they're alone, they're not on their own. We're all here there supporting them. And so I also want to thank our residence life staff, everybody who's helped them help the students who returned home to do so while maintaining their social distancing. We then began a partnership locally with a local COVID-19 work group, a city, state, county, health partners, the Med Center, Graves Gilbert, Greenview Hospital, and all the other health providers in town, really making sure that this is a coordinated effort between the university and all of our local partners. We also created a COVID-19 task force here on campus that included the cabinet plus all of our governance organizations. And I'm really proud of the way in which we've collaborated with Faculty Senate, Staff Senate, and our Student Senate. I think it makes us unique in the state and perhaps in the country for the way in which we've engaged all of those governance organizations as equal deciders as we go through this. So we spent the first couple of weeks adjusting to our new normal. And then for the past 3 weeks, leadership along with the task force and the budget staff in consultation with the board have been building scenarios and financial contingencies. Let me say this. We are in a strong position. We've worked hard in the past 3 years to get our fiscal house in order. And the process of building a budget for next year with the Budget Executive Council continues and will continue. But now that we have those financial contingencies built with our current operations stable, we have to turn to operations for the fall. We've been organizing our structure and building the committees, and on Monday, we're going to announce how we put plans in place to restart WKU in August. Now, there is terrific uncertainty left still, and no matter what happens, we're not going to operate this August the way we did last August, but we will be prepared for every eventuality. We know that our students want to come home, and we want them home on our hill. And then I want to make a point about our market position. Everything that we've seen from students suggests that as much as they've appreciated what we've done to create an experience that allows them to continue their education, I've not had one of them say to me, "I'm so thankful for this, I'm going to continue learning online." Every one of them wants to be back in person experiencing the total WKU experience we provide for our young people. And we think we're going to be in good shape for the fall. We have a real competitive advantage. All the national survey data says that some students who thought they might go farther away for college are looking closer to home. And then also they may be looking for more value-oriented institutions. And so if you think about what a great value we are compared to that red place up the road and that blue place, plus the amazing caring community we have, the undergraduate-focused experience, we are in very good shape. And as a matter of fact, just as of yesterday, we continue to maintain our growth in freshman recruitment and subscription. We know that we have more freshman housing deposits year over year. We have more registration orientation program deposits, and we're going to be in good shape if we can maintain that through to August. I want to say one last thing before I take your questions. And we're a family, and I know that our students and our families are struggling and suffering financially. You look around our community, and we know people are under great fiscal stress. And so I want to announce today a couple things. Number one, I'm taking a 10% pay reduction, and I'm going to forego all the bonuses afforded to me. And all of this is going to be directed to support the Opportunity Fund and our students and our families who are in need. I also asked the President's Cabinet to take a 10% reduction in salary, and I am proud of the overwhelmingly positive response from them. Those dollars also will support students and our WKU families. And last, Todd Stewart last week in athletics wanted to help. So in addition to Todd, Coach Stansberry, Coach Helton, they all will be reducing their salaries by 10% as well, all to help our students. Crises show the true nature of organizations. And if you look at the way in which we've responded, the way in which we've taken care of our family and our young people, the way we wrapped our arms around them and continue to make sure that no matter what challenges they face, they're going to be successful, I think that when we come through this together on the other side, we're going to be an even stronger institution because of it. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you all may have, but it has certainly been one of the most fascinating 6 weeks of my life and my professional career, and I imagine the same is true for my colleagues on the cabinet and governance organizations.
I will now call upon the regents for any questions.
I just wanted to commend President Gavone. A lot of you all, you know, obviously haven't got to play that role on the committee, and seeing that working on the inside of the COVID-19 committee has been an honor, but it's something that no other, WKU and a few other schools in the state have put students on their task force, their COVID-19 committee. And that speaks volumes for, President Gavone, the President's Cabinet, the shared governance groups, and the approach that the organization is taking is truly a holistic shared governance approach that no other school is taking. And I think that speaks volumes on the culture that is here at WKU and the family that we represent here. So I just wanted to, come out and say publicly, thank you, President Gavone. Thank you to the members of the cabinet and everyone who's played an integral role on that committee for all that you've done. And we're in a good situation because everyone's working together. And I don't think it would be possible without President Gavone's leadership. Thank you all.
Thank you, Will. Any other regent? I know Todd's on the Zoom and other members of the cabinet. So appreciative of the actions by our president and the cabinet members and the athletic department for voluntarily taking the initiative to set an example for this university and our university family. As a member of the Board of Regents, this is remarkable. This is much appreciated. This is a sincere effort on their behalf to continue as an example of the kind of leadership that WKU has always put forth within the collegiate community. So thank you very much. It is much appreciated. It shows how much we care about our students and about our faculty and our staff and the entirety of the team effort that goes forth day in and day out on this campus. If I may, I'd like to make a short statement that would be a paraphrase of a letter that the Board of Regents sent to the faculty and staff back on March 26, 2020. I do that for the purpose of putting it on record as an example of the care and concern that the Board has for our WKU family, and to create a medium where this can be referred to in the future and of record. That letter basically said it was addressed to the faculty and staff. Thank you for your remarkable efforts during the last 4 weeks to support each other, support our students, and support our university. The COVID-19 pandemic has turned our world upside down in many ways, professionally and personally. In a short time frame, almost every service WKU provides has been rethought and reshaped, from class instruction delivery and grading to housing, dining, advising, athletics. It's hard to imagine any company with the breadth and depth of changes to make as a result of this crisis that compared to those we have seen from higher education institutions. The complexity of daily operations at universities like WKU, from running residential communities to international operations, can only be managed successfully and by the most committed and adept individuals. The WKU Board of Regents recognizes your remarkable work and continued dedication to our students and to WKU. Individuals, teams, departments, and divisions across our campuses have risen up and together to work to overcome one of the greatest challenges in our institution's history. We understand it has been difficult and appreciate all that you are doing. Please take care of one another and know that we are here to support you along the way. That letter was signed by every member of the Board of Regents and, again, is an expression of our care for our WKU family. And what has been announced today is evidence of the support campus-wide, evidencing we will get through this together. So thank you. Before we go to the next item on the agenda, one last call for any questions or comments before we move into our committee structures. Hearing none, thanks, Mr. President. Thank your cabinet. Thank the athletic folks, Todd and your group. Please extend to each of them and to yourself our sincere appreciation, and to the cabinet members and the administration. Next item on the agenda is the Finance and Budget Committee. Chair Jason McKinney.
The first item on our agenda is FB1, approval of the county report on application of agreed upon procedures for NCAA compliance report. I believe we have Brad from Crow with us. He's with us about as many meetings as we have this week.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, this is, I think, maybe the third consecutive meeting I've been able to attend. But happy to be able to join you today. I don't want to take a lot of your time, but do want to go through this and take any questions you might have on it. So if you want to go to the next slide.
Right, that was going to be mine, so
Oh, okay. Sorry, Susan.
So there you go.
Sorry, Susan. Yeah, so highlights here, no significant exceptions noted in the NCAA report. Go to the next slide, please. One more. All right, so this, just kind of refresh your memory on all this because I have been in there presenting it multiple times. This is the full scope of services that we provide. As you can see there, most of the other things I've already presented on back in October or in January. So today, presenting on the NCAA agreed upon procedures. Next slide. So this just gives you a brief overview of what's included here. So it is a required procedures that all NCAA Division I schools are required to go through and have completed. There are 53 revenue testing procedures, 65 expense testing procedures, 3 what they call additional minimum procedures, and then 12 minimum procedures for other reporting. Those are all the same for all Division I, so those are all required by NCAA. Those are not determined by anyone at WKU or by us. Go to the next slide. So this gives you just a high-level view of the schedule of revenue and expenses. If you have the report, if you have looked at that, it breaks it down into a prescribed format, again, required by the NCAA, 19 categories of revenue and 22 categories of expenses. High level here, revenue expenses for 2019 were $30.77 million, so almost exactly the same as the 2018 revenue expenses of $30.60 million. And then I included here also the direct institutional support amounts for each year, which is usually one of the either question or one of the most looked at items, I guess, on the schedule of revenue expenses. So you can see the direct institutional support this year was down from $14.77 million to $13.53 million, which in this case, typically that is a good thing. So that is how much support the institution has had to provide to essentially balance that budget, balance that schedule of revenue expenses. Obviously, it's a common thing for most athletic departments, and so the fact that they were able to reduce that down, you were able to had to support it less than you did in the previous year is a positive. Next slide. So jumping into the procedures, on the revenue and expense side of things, I just wanted to point out a few things in here. In the revenue section, procedure 5, there were some immaterial variances between the net sales per ticket report and the schedule of revenue expenses. Very immaterial, $5,900 in comparison to a $2.3 million in sales. So nothing significant. It is something that we note in there just because it is a difference, but it's not significant or material. Procedure 41, there was also a difference between the IMG royalty revenue and the amount actually received, but that is fairly common. Again, so there was 11,000 was expected to be received, and I think it was in FY20. So just a timing difference of when you actually received that money versus when it's reported. All other procedures on the revenue side, there were no exceptions or they were not applicable. On the expense side of the procedures, same thing, there were no exceptions or they were not applicable. So no variances to report there. Next slide. As I mentioned, there were a few additional procedures. Under the additional minimum procedures, procedure 1, there was immaterial differences between the compliance assistant and the university records. So across the 8 different sports that are reported on, 27,000, or sorry, across 8 different sports, it covered $27,000 variance. So it wasn't just focused on one sport in particular. But again, as in comparison to the overall amount of student aid related to the sports, very immaterial amount. And so it is reported, but is not considered to be a significant concern. no other exceptions or items to note there in the additional minimum procedures. And then similarly on the minimum procedures for other reporting items, there was nothing to report there. Next slide. So that covers the summary and the high-level overview of the NCAA 3-POP procedures report. Again, that was for FY 2019, so ending at June 30, 2019. Any questions?
Okay. I have a question. On the revenue side, this is in attachment B. Essentially, you see that the direct institutional support goes down by $1.3 million, and we see an increase in contributions of about the same amount, and this allows basically the total revenue and expense to be about 2%. What is that contribution? Is that private support?
Yeah, that's primarily private support. It could be other contributions, but typically that is donor contributions, yes.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Any other questions?
Okay, hearing no other questions. Regent Ball and Regent Brinkley, do I have a motion to approve FB1?
Regent Brinkley says so moved.
Second.
All right, Regent Brinkley. Can you call the vote?
Yes, sir. Regent Ball?
Yes.
Regent Brinkley is yes. Regent McKinney?
Yes.
Chair McKinney, the vote is 3-0, FB1 passes.
Thank you. Regent Brinkley? And thank you, Brad, for presenting for us.
Yep. Thank you all. Have a good meeting.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is FB2, acceptance of the statement of revenue and expenditures for the third quarter. Susan, do you have a presentation to make on this?
Yes, thank you, Regent McKinney. Next slide.
It's locked up. Yeah. Hang on, I'll get it. Let's try this again. Tell her just a minute, I'm going to have to reopen it.
Cheat.
Okay.
Just a slight glitch.
Yeah, always. Anthony, how do I need to reopen that? I need to minimize this for a second. There we go. Okay. I'll go down here. Let's just open it again. That's what we want to be. Okay. Back to where I get back to right there. Yeah. Oops.
And we need to probably jump about 7 or 8 slides. There we go. Okay, so let me just begin by saying that overall the third quarter budget versus actual report is tracking well as compared to prior year. So let me just hit some of the high-level revenues and expenditures, and then we'll open it up. Basically, to reemphasize what the president said to the regents earlier, we are in a good financial position. We have a strong cash position, which is excellent given what we're dealing with the pandemic. On the revenue side, tuition and fees, just slightly behind last year as a percent of budget, 93.7 to 94.1%. So most would see that as pretty much flat. Probably the slight difference, decline, could relate to the fact of suspending spring collections. This was a decision related to the COVID-19. State appropriation is on target at 80%. Other revenues are down slightly, and that is primarily due to some timing of Conference USA revenue. And grants and contracts continue to track down from prior year. Again, that's offset by a light decline on the expenditure side. Auxiliary revenue has reached 104.7% of budget, and primarily because of a $6 million capital investment with our Aramark Commons project. So any questions on the revenue side? Okay, so next slide. So just to remind the Regents, we changed our layout of the budget versus actual on the expenditure side to more closely align our report with our financial statements. So the good news, overall expenditures are down over $3 million through the first three quarters as compared to last year. And the good news of that is we move into the fourth quarter, and with the hiring freeze that we put into place and the really ratcheting down of procurement spend and travel expenditures, I would expect that the fourth quarter report will look even more promising than the third quarter. So again, just to kind of recap the expenditure side, we are down overall over $3 million from prior year in spend. So that's my brief report on the third quarter. I'm happy to take any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Susan on the...
I have a question. So if I compare this year with last year, right, I roughly see that as a percentage of budgeted, we are down in terms of revenue by about 1%. And in terms of expenditure, we are sort of up by 0.5%. You know, now it doesn't seem like in terms of percentage that is a huge difference, but, you know, 1% for a $400 million budget is a substantial amount of money. So my question to you is, do you expect that we're going to come up a little bit short of where we were at the end of last year, or do you think this will balance out in this quarter?
Well, classic. I think most of the decline is in areas that are offset by expenditures. And most of that is having to do with timing, as I talked about. We fully expect for Conference USA revenue to come in this year. It will be slightly below what was projected because of the pandemic and what has happened with athletics across the nation. Having said that, I spoke with Todd Stewart earlier, and we fully expect the expenditures to go down as well. As I said, tuition revenue is just slightly below. We hope to be able to open the building back up in May, but of course that's just dependent on a lot of different factors that we really can't project at this time. But we can certainly look at it this way. We can certainly book a receivable at the end of the year for those outstanding bills, as long as we build feel as if they're collectible.
Okay, thank you.
Susan, academic support as a percentage of budget is tracking quite a bit higher than last year. Do you have any insight into why that is?
I do not. I have to look at that, Jason. It will damage some of those details, but I can get back with you for sure.
All right, any other questions? Hearing none, Regent Franklin, Regent Ball, do I have a motion to approve that thing too? A second. We have a motion and a second. Regent Franklin, would you call the vote?
Regent Ball?
Yes.
Regent Franklin is yes. Regent McKinney?
Yes.
Chair McKinney, vote is 3-0, motion carries.
IFP2.
Thank you, sir. The next item on the Finance and Budget Committee agenda is FB3, approval of the revised personnel actions that were sent out earlier this week. Susan, do you have anything to say about these?
Next slide, please. So basically, these are the standard personnel actions that we bring to the regents quarterly. Faculty and staff personnel actions are from January 6th through March 16th. The faculty and staff one-time payments are February 1 through March 31. As requested by some regents, again, last quarter we reformatted this report slightly, so that it would be subtotal by employee and would be arranged in descending order by subtotal, so that you would see the higher adjustments on the top. So I'm happy to take any questions.
I have none.
Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
If nobody has any questions or concerns about personnel actions, Regent Ball and Regent Brindley, I'll entertain a motion to approve FB3.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
All right, Regent Brindley, would you please call the vote?
Regent Ball?
Yes.
Regent Brindley is yes. Regent McKinney?
Yes.
Chair McKinney, the motion carries 3-0 on FB3.
Thank you, sir. And the last item on our action agenda is FB4 approval and authorization for the privatization of the WKU store. Susan, I believe we have a presentation on that as well.
Yes, and before I turn it over to Dr. Jennifer Tugas, who will lead us through the presentation, she's our interim AVP for Business Services. I just wanted to say this was something that we began looking at in early last fall. It's been a collaborative process. We put together an RFP committee, Well, I don't want to steal any of Jennifer's thunder, but probably over the last month, we've been consulting with our constituency groups. We had a meeting with the faculty senate, and the student government. So we met with Will's executive committee, and then also met with the full student government. So having said all that, I will turn it over to Dr. Tugas, who, again, took over as interim AVP for Business Services. I believe it was in November. She sat on the RFP committee, so she's been intimately involved with the whole process. So, Jennifer?
I apologize. Thank you, Susan, for the introduction. As Susan mentioned, I started in this position in November, which pretty well corresponded with when the RFP went out on the streets. But if you go to the next slide, the committee really took this approach with two different questions. And the first question was, is it appropriate to to consider outsourcing, if we compare what the WQE store does compared to what the responding vendors can do. Is it the right move for the institution to outsource? And ultimately, we decided that it was the right decision to make to recommend outsourcing. And the reasons for that were that pretty much over the past decade, the university, between the Great Recession and between the budget cuts that we've experienced recently, the WKU store has tried to kind of keep up with changing times with very limited resources. And we're really not able to do that at the same time the likes of Amazon and others were growing online, online competition. There have been rapid changes in the textbook industry, and growth of not only online competition, but also digital, digital textbook delivery. So there's a desire to maintain a high level of service for WKU students, as well as faculty, staff, alumni. But all of that was in the context of a challenging budget, where we're looking for every opportunity to reduce costs and improve revenues across campus. If you go to the next slide, please. So the committee reasons for the recommendation to privatize include the ability to increase service to both students and faculty, ability to increase market share, and therefore increase revenues coming back to the institution. We recommended Barnes & Noble College because they presented, part of the reason was they presented the best plan for effective employees, as well as the first two bullets there. But they also have student employment opportunities, which include a career pathway for students who may be interested in that industry. There's also ability to keep textbook prices low, which was a concern that was voiced in many different venues. In addition to offering first day access, which is our day one access, they also have a wide range of open educational resource products and courseware that goes along with that. All of that will be available to the faculty as they go through the textbook adoption process. Barnes & Noble also had the best financial package for WKU. So if you go to the next slide. The financial proposal from Barnes & Noble College includes a $1 million guaranteed revenue for the first year of the contract. In additional years, it would be 90% of commissionable sales based on the previous fiscal year. It does include a $350,000 unrestricted signing bonus, a $15,000 annual textbook scholarship, and a $150,000 investment in the store. That portion of it will involve a collaboration between WKU and Barnes & Noble as a new store plan is developed, and that's about a six-month process. The transition at this point is the target date is July 1. We have been working under a letter of intent kind of in tandem with this approval process, so the implementation process is underway at this point. But taking note of that $150,000 investment in the store, they're also setting aside $250,000 in the future for a store refresh. As we look at the 10-year contract, 5 or 6 years into the contract, we could refresh the store again. So that's a summary of the proposal to privatize the WKU store. And with that, I'll open up to questions.
I have a question. Under budgetary implications, we list the privatization of the WKU store removes $7 million in operational expenses from the university budget. Is there anything you'd like to clarify on that?
Yeah. Oh, Susan, you want that one?
Yeah, I can take that one. Is intended to say is that the auxiliary budget for the university will go down by the $7 million that the bookstore is budgeted. It's also, I think, in to clarify your point, David, the revenue for auxiliaries will also go down by $7 million. So we're certainly open to an amendment as far as to the action item.
Okay. Well, I would propose that if it's going to be listed as an operational expense, that it be the true operational expense, which I believe is in the 1.174 range. Or I would allow language to clarify the $7 million, but I do think that's I think that's a little deceiving.
David, the language that we were looking at following the presentation we had with you, or discussion we had with you, was to change it to the privatization of the WKU store decreases the WKU auxiliary's revenue and expense budget by $6.9 million. Does that satisfy your needs?
I would accept that, yes. So we'll need to read that in for the permanent record if this action item is approved under the budgetary implications. If you can send that language to Julia McDonald, we'll try and word it in with the motion.
Yes, Jennifer, you can send that, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The second question I have is, was the bookstore profitable?
Yes.
Given that the bookstore was profitable, do you see, and this question is probably for Susan, given that in recent history, dining facilities, medical services have all been privatized, do you feel like adding the bookstore to that list is a trend that will continue?
As we've discussed, at this specific time, David, there's no additional outsourcing of campus services within my area that I'm looking at.
Regent McKinney, if I could address that as well, please.
Yes,
sir. Regent Brinkley, one of the things I think we've talked about and continue to work toward is ensuring that we do everything we can to invest in our core functions, which is instruction, research, and taking care of our students. Things that support that and are able to be privatized to gain either efficiencies or generate additional revenue, we'll continue to look at all those opportunities. I would agree with Susan in that we've taken advantage of almost all of them now. But any way we can get more efficient and save money on the business and operations side of the university and reinvest those dollars on our core mission, I think we should.
And so I just wanted to say as well, Regent Brinkley, that this was not all about additional revenue, although that's important, particularly in the times that we face right now. But also, and I think Jennifer can touch on this, through this process and we've learned, as she started out by stating, is that we have just not been able to keep up with what the private industry can do in Missouri. Services for our students, services for our faculty and staff, branding opportunities, all of those things. So there were many things that were factored into the decision of the RFP committee to make this recommendation to the president.
Yeah, I would agree with the assessment that you're making. And I want to make sure everybody understands that I understand the opportunity. I would have liked to guarantee that the staff members that did nothing really incorrectly other than their jobs for guaranteed positions. I know that it is a good position for them if they choose to work for Barnes & Noble. That's what I've been told, that they have an opportunity to put their best foot forward. The failing of the strategy in the bookstore, though, really is not go to anybody else other than the previous leadership that was over the bookstore. If those plans weren't made, I don't think that the current staff should be held really accountable for the past problems, but I've made everything noted that I wanted noted. I have asked all the questions that I have, and I am satisfied with the answers and the approach. Thank you very much for your time.
David, or Regent Brinkley, if I could follow up on that statement. I agree with you 100% that this is no fault of anybody currently employed at the bookstore. It truly is a matter that the outside world has changed faster than we could keep up with, and the independent vendors that have been able to invest quite literally millions of dollars into the products and services that they can bring to WKU. It's a, you know, kind of as I told Sarah, it's the bookstore was David against Goliath. They had no stone or sling. We just were not able to keep up. And to the leadership point, we did have very strong leadership that was able to turn the store into a profitable operation. That leadership has since had opportunities to move on to other positions. And that's one of the operational challenges that we continue to face as we look at recruiting that kind of talent and maintaining that kind of investment. It's really difficult for a store in our market. And it's very similar to the kind of challenges we had on the transit side, where when we were establishing the parking and transportation department and needed to bring in the expertise to really develop the transportation program to where it is today, after four national searches, I wasn't able to bring that kind of talent to campus, and that's when we went to a management contract for that. And we're seeing this similar kind of thing with WKU store and the bookstore industry, which is one of the reasons why many that were on that RFP committee, and many on the committee were divided. Everybody in the room definitely kept an open mind as we were reviewing those. Some leaned in, you know, from the beginning we knew who was leaning towards outsourcing, who was leaning towards keeping it in-house. But in the end, it was fairly well unanimous that this was the right recommendation at this time.
May I ask a question, please?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I just want to know how WKU and the board are going to track the possibility of rising prices. Or, you know, what guarantee do we have, or is there any contract language that would allow WKU to monitor the pricing? You know, Barnes & Noble College, because it's part of Barnes & Noble Education, are a for-profit corporation. WKU store was not. And I just want to make sure that we are able to monitor the pricing so that we don't price books out so much for the students. And I just want to know if there's any language in the contract that will address that.
Yes, ma'am. There are two different strategies there that really help us. One is that the contract itself specifies the calculation that they can use to determine their sale price for the books, for the textbooks. And that is consistent with what the WKU store currently uses. The second piece of that is that the Adoptions Insights portal that Barnes & Noble is bringing, and actually I'll even add a third piece to it, which is the student side. But the Adoption Insights portal that Barnes & Noble provides for the faculty as they're choosing the textbooks to adopt includes all of the various options for the text they're delivering. So in addition to, say, your standard hardbound published book, it would include here's a electronic digital access version, which is substantially less expensive. There's also the first day access, which is kind of a class adoption approach, which is also below market value from what you can get directly from the publishers. And also those open educational resource options that I mentioned. So there are a lot of low-cost options that the faculty can choose, and that dictates the cost to the students more so than what Barnes & Noble chooses or is able to get from the publishers. The third part of it is truly the online competition, and what Barnes & Noble is able to do is to price match. Like if you're looking at a brand-new textbook straight from the publisher, Amazon or Barnes & Noble will price match Amazon and other competitors for that.
you know, as I was researching, it looks like that the selling points for Barnes & Noble College were they can bring technology, online textbooks, and digital learning, which was very important. And it looks like across the nation and universities nationwide, it's about 50-50, whether they're privatized or whether they're part of the university as a whole. And I just checked, they have like 773 of these stores. And then it looks like that there are seven of them there in the state of Kentucky. And I did go through because I probably, out of the Board of Regents, probably shop at the WKU store more than anybody else does and try to contribute as much as I possibly can to make to their success. And I just want to say that as I was looking through the different merchandise, I was impressed with what they saw. You know, I never think there's enough WKU merchandise out there to buy. So when I got to see the inventory they were carrying in the different stores in Kentucky and stuff, it was quite impressive. I just want to make sure that we don't get in a situation where we outgas ourselves because they are a for-profit corporation.
Agreed 100%.
Thank you.
Hey, I weighed in there. It's a similar point. Even so, I don't vote today. I have come reluctantly to the decision that when it comes to us in May that I would support this. But I have some philosophical questions here. I mean, we are a non-for-profit organization. And basically, outsourcing things for increasing of revenue is not necessarily something we should do. So if you think about what would make Barnes & Noble more profitable, well, there's members of the WKU family. They're first the employees, which may lose some of the benefits, health insurance, retirement, which they might have if they stay with us. They may have some part-time jobs versus full-time jobs. And so they can increase the profits by basically having less personnel expenses. And then what else can they do? Well, they can essentially raise the price of what they're selling. This is the same point Julie was making. And so if I'm going to look at how did that work out for us in the past, well, we outsourced the BSAs, building service attendants, and at least from where I'm walking around the campus, somebody would claim that the buildings have gotten cleaner by doing that. I would say, probably not. We outsourced the food services, and if you look at our meal plans, right, yes, we had more choices now than we had before, but our students pay about $8 a meal. And $8 a meal is, you know, gee, I can go anywhere and go and read and find a plan for $8 a meal, in particular if you think that this is a meal plan which has three meals, right? So breakfast also costs $8. And so yes, we have better service, but there is also a higher price. And I think that ought to be, so when we negotiate the final details of the contract, I think that we need to have a close eye on protecting what we call the WKU family, and that is the people currently working there, and also the students, that they don't pay the price in terms of higher prices. The arguments you made do not convince me. We have one-day access. We have electronic textbooks, the current thing, and the Master Department has moved to one-day access in all Gen Ed classes. So the current environment gives us access to electronic textbooks. And philosophically, I want to go one step further. So I was putting myself in a situation, well, suppose we are saying, let's outsource the Master Department. You know, well, we can say, well, maybe Disney can do this. Well, they have an app. They have more online services than the Master Department can put together themselves. They're funnier than the Master Department. You know, they can guarantee that we have a passing rate of whatever, which is higher than what we currently achieve. And so there ought to be some points where we say, no, we should not outsource this because this is what we are as an organization. And the bookstore is sort of right in between there. Should we have a bookstore? Yeah, should that be part of the WKU identity? Yes. Does it need to have a vendor which is a national competitive vendor? I do not know. Okay. So I think this is not necessarily a big plus for us. We just have to see how that plays out.
Dr. Ernst, I definitely respect your point of view, and I think philosophically I'm aligned with you more so than they realize. The third piece of how to generate revenue is the increased market share. And I think that's the depth of the expertise that the outsourced company can bring to campus, that we don't have quite as much depth, you know, with our current talent. And that goes back to the change in leadership again that we've had. So that's one of the benefits of bringing in the outsourced vendor and then having that, the expertise of the corporation behind. It's if you ask a question to the person and they don't know the answer, they have the resources at their fingertips to get the answer that's needed. As you take a look at how the bookstore industry, bookstores across the United States are responding to COVID, whereas ourselves, we could reach out to our colleagues, they would have the additional depth of the corporation and how, and there are just more resources there that are available to the leadership there. So I think that's, in my mind, that's where the largest growth in revenue potential is really our market share.
All of this reminds me of when we outsourced the medical piece. It was not long after I came on the board, but the first year we saved $1.2 million. On top of that, we got another $100,000, but certainly we didn't have the expertise in running a medical practice on campus very well. So, not that this will compare with that, but that privatization, I feel like, worked very well and actually expanded our services.
Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve FP4 with the amended budgetary implications stating that revenue and expenses will decrease by $6.9 million related to this motion. Did I hear a motion?
Yes, I'll make that motion.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Paul. I'll second the motion. Regent Franklin, would you call the vote, please?
Yes. Regent Ball?
Yes.
Regent Brinkley is no. Regent McKinney?
Yes.
Chair McKinney, the vote is 2-1. Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. That concludes the action item agenda for Finance and Budget Committee. The last item on our agenda is the information item, the quarterly internal audit report from Ms. Sarah Reese. Sarah?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'll just check to see if you're still with us.
Oh, okay. I'm still here. I just want to be sure you all can hear me. Good afternoon to our regents and leadership team and guests. I am here to present to you the internal audit quarterly update. You might recognize that this is a different face than the one that you're used to seeing presenting the internal audit business. Jennifer Miller was our internal audit director for 6 years, and she just recently left the KU for an exciting opportunity. And while I'm excited for her, I think I can speak for all of us on the right way. She will be missed. But as Kenny said, my name is Sarah Reese, and I have worked in the KU's internal audit department for the last 5 years. And during that time, I would like to say I truly believe it's absolutely one of the best jobs at WKU. I have the privilege of learning a lot about how different processes, kind of how things go on behind the scenes. I get the privilege of working with and meeting hardworking, dedicated folks all over campus. And we have built their trust during my time here and helped them to identify pain points in their processes and possible inefficiencies. And we've had the opportunity to help them make improvements, and it's always an interesting job, I'll say that. So during that time, my time here, I also earned the CIA designation, which is the International Gold Standard for Internal Auditors, and it stands for Certified Internal Auditor, and sadly, it doesn't have anything to do with secret agents, even though the acronym might suggest otherwise. I am excited to continue to build on the foundation that Jennifer has created during her time here, and excited to work with all of you and to help continue to work towards helping WKU achieve its strategic objectives. Now on to the quarterly reports. We had 3 engagements that were completed this quarter, 2 of which were related to NCAA compliance. The first is a ticket sale review. We do that in collaboration with the external auditors. They review our work papers and documentation, and they incorporate that into the larger project that we heard Brad report on earlier. They agree upon procedures. The second NCAA compliance project was football paid attendance. That's something that we do annually, and it's to verify that we are compliant with the criteria that NCAA has put forth on paid attendance. The third report is not related to NCAA compliance. It was a travel expense audit, and the results of that were 6 recommendations. Of the 6 recommendations, 3 were rated as low risk, 3 as medium, and there were no high risk items. The main finding was that WKU would benefit from implementing a travel management software. This would streamline the current reimbursement and procurement processes related to travel. It would result in significant cost savings in that we would have improved compliance with current policies. It would also eliminate the manual, labor-intensive, paper-based processes that we use now. It also would give us the ability to aggregate all of the travel spending data, and we could use that information to negotiate discounts directly with vendors, which would also save us. So those were the 3 audit engagements that we have completed during this quarter. There are, as you see on your agenda items, several upcoming projects that I hope to report to you on in the following quarters. One more small note before I'm done, though, is that we are in the middle of the annual risk assessment, and as you all know, this is an important part of our enterprise risk management strategy. I am going to request participation from each region, if at all possible. I will send you that information out via email before the end of the month. And feel free, whenever you get that information, to contact me with any questions or concerns that you have. And otherwise, I look forward to your feedback and any kind of information that, that you'd like to provide in that project. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has questions about anything that, I've discussed here.
Thank you, Sarah. Does anybody have any questions for Sarah? All right, hearing none. Thank you again, Sarah. And Chair Newman, that concludes the business for the Finance and Budget.
Thank you, Regent McKinney. We next move to the academic.